Welcome to Frank on Target, your gateway to the world of politics, controversy, and the great outdoors. Join us as we dive into the heart of today's most pressing issues, explore the latest headlines, and uncover the wonders of nature, all under the enlightened guidance of our host, Frank Santarella.
How you doing? This is Frank on Target, and we're on WVFF 97.7 FM, and I'm here with Airgun Angie. Used to be Miss Angie, but no longer Miss Angie. Now she's Airgun Angie because I think I'm tired of watching her wash the blood off her hands because she is a killer now. Killer of all kinds of vermin. Vermin like iguanas, and what other kind of vermin, Angie?
Pretty much anything. Armadillos. Rats.
Armadillos.
Squirrels.
Squirrels. And the little tiny deer that we have here in South Carolina.
Yeah, so, they've got some nice ones somewhere.
So you've been out hunting already?
I have. I've probably sat 5 or 6 evenings, and one morning. Mornings are hard to sit just because it's almost like going to a doctor's office sometimes where you sit for so long in the waiting room, and when you leave there, you're tired from sitting. So getting up super early and sitting there for a couple of hours just leaves me feeling tired. So mornings are rough. I prefer evenings. But I really think a lot of deer.
Do you see a lot of deer in the morning?
I think it's better hunting in the morning.
Do you really?
I do.
See, I'm going to tell you. You know, the crazy thing is that, you know, I haven't always had the luxury of being able to hunt in the morning. All right, because I would generally hunt either on the weekend or after work. Before the time change, you have 3 hours. You know, you have 3 hours to be in the woods. So all my life, what I've done is I used to bow hunt a lot, as you know. I'd get home from work, change my clothes, and go in the woods. And you know, I'd hunt until dark, and that's just what I became accustomed to. The only problem is, if you're going to do that, if you're going to hunt until dusk, you better kill them dead. Mm. You better kill them dead because, I mean, if you got to chase them, I've been out there chasing them with a flashlight, and I actually have one of those fancy flashlights that show up blood. Well, they show up blood great, but they also show up if you're in around hardwoods. The red leaves from maple trees,
right?
You know, they show up as blood. So that's really an issue. But yeah, you got to kill them dead. And with the bow, I've been very, very fortunate with the bow. They take that ninja 50 steps and roll over kind of thing. So just take a couple of steps and go to sleep. You know, so
yeah,
that works out rather well.
Well, I've decided I'm going to stop wearing camouflage, and I'm just going to look like a jogger when I go sit in my stand, because that's when I see the most deer.
Well, you know, truth is, camo. If you're exposed camo, you're not hunting off the ground, right?
No, I'm in a blind. I'm actually, it's pretty luxurious. It's like, I don't know, 8x10. I've got two lawn chairs in there, a nice little shelf for my stuff. It's pretty
sweet. God bless you. You running water?
Almost, not quite.
You got a Keurig coffee maker in there? Oh, my. Yeah,
no, they'd smell that.
So much for smell. I'm going to tell you something crazy. Though I'd love to hunt with the bow, I used to hunt with the shotgun, with rifle slugs up north, a whole lot. And I'm going to tell you, I've shot a deer. I can hold a cigarette in my left hand and have it on the fore end of the shotgun and shoot a deer. The only problem is the wind.
Yeah.
And not that the deer smell the cigarette. The problem is if the wind is in your face, it blows the smoke in your eyes, and you have trouble seeing the sights. But that's the only problem.
That's interesting. I've heard of a lot of people like sitting up in stands smoking, and the deer aren't bothered by it. It's just
no.
People try. There's the science to hunting, So they say, and people try to figure it out, but it seems like it's just different all the time. There's
well, here's another crazy thing. How high is your stand off the ground?
About 10 feet.
You know, ladder stands generally have three sections in them. One section is 6 foot, and then the other two bring you up to 15 feet. I never put the third section in. If I can get my feet 6 feet off the ground, I feel safe. All right. Only thing is, do not move your feet. If you move your feet, they got you. All right. But if you don't move your feet, 6 feet off the ground always worked for me. And I'll tell you what the big thing is. When you're shooting, and I never shot a crossbow, so I'm either shooting a recurve or a compound. I'm old enough that I used to hunt with a recurve. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That's real interesting. But I had the problem that I always had was the higher you go, the more you have to account for the change in trajectory.
Right.
Than if you were parallel to the ground. And I'm going to tell you, they got sights that'll tilt and all this fancy stuff. And I'm sorry, I can't get into it. I just stay as low to the ground as possible. And the crazy thing is, before we had, rangefinders used to be expensive. Now they're cheap. All right. When rangefinders were expensive, I used to take a string and tie it on the bottom of the tree and just take a string out and measure my distances. And where you have the game trails, you know they're going to come down the game trails generally.
Yeah.
Where you used to have the game trails, I used to mark them off, stupid stuff. A little bit of surveyor's tape, maybe a little bit of chalk on the tree or something like that. Stuff that's going to go away. And I'd mark all my distances. And then I don't have to worry about that accounting for the they call that the hypotenuse of the angle. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, you don't have to. I mean, I've never considered that shooting a firearm or even my 50 cal air gun.
No.
Well, and because I was probably 15 feet up in a tree stand when I shot my TC-45 and killed a buck.
Yeah. That shoots pretty flat though at that distance,
Yeah, I don't know the air.
How far were you shooting? How far were you shooting?
50 yards.
Is it pretty flat at 50 yards?
Mm, not really.
No.
They have all air guns have an arc.
It's a function of velocity.
Yeah, it's a decent arc.
Yeah. So I mean, your point of impact at 25 yards is significantly different than 50.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
By how much you figure?
Probably with the 50 cal. I'd say a couple inches.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, air is amazing. It's amazing what they can do with air, but there's also a lot of limitations with it, too. Yeah.
Well, I mean you shoot high shoulder, right?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, depends on the angle that they give me. And the time that I have to take the shot.
Well, even at high shoulder, you're shooting for a 4-inch circle.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's pretty forgiving.
Yeah.
But
I don't recall a time that I took a shot at a deer with either one of my 50 cals, or the other one was a 45, and didn't hit them where I was aiming. So
that's good.
Yeah, it's
that's good.
But it all has to do with trigger time. You get to know your rifle, and then the more you hunt, I think the less jittery you are, and the less.
That's true. I'm going to tell you something. There were times with the bow that I got, your leg starts shaking a little bit, But right now, I mean, at this point when I'm hunting, when I take a shot, I'm going to work, I'm going to work. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. I don't know that I really start shaking before the shot. My heart starts racing, yes. But as far as shaking, for me, that comes after I shoot.
I understand that. Yep. Well, the other thing is, too, it is, you have to treat it as you're going to work,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's crazy. And setting up your shot, I've learned once I identify which animal I'm gonna take, setting up the shot just comes so natural now. And I think this is the difference between you and I and people that don't shoot all the time. All right, you're not shooting at, and we'll use deer for an example. You're not shooting at a deer. You're shooting at a certain spot on a deer. I don't know about you, but I pick out a point, mm-hmm. and I visualize that point, even though it's all brown, right?
Yep.
I visualize that point, and that's where I'm putting the bullet.
Yep.
All right.
I even do it on the ones that I'm not going to shoot. Like, there's been a doe in a couple
you do
of
that too?
Yep, and they're you, sitting there, and I'm looking there. I'm through
you
the
do that
all
too?
Right, if you were shootable, this is where I would shoot you.
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I do that all the time. And recently, the problem when I was actually taking a shot is making sure that I don't hit two deer.
Yeah.
Which could be a problem. I mean, all these guns, I don't know about the Egger, now you're shooting that 7mm 08, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful gun. I'll tell you something crazy. If you took that gun to the range and it didn't shoot, I would have a good time making that gun shoot. But it shoots, so you don't have that problem.
So what would you do to it to make it shoot if it didn't shoot?
Well, first of all, the first things first, make sure that it's bedded in the stock well. Make sure that the screws for the action, mm-hmm. that they have equal tension and that they're at the right tension, okay? Then see if it shoots. Then if it rocks. I had a Savage Model 12 and it was shooting, but I was shooting maybe inch and a half at 100, and that wasn't going to cut it. That wasn't going to give me a medal. All right. So I gave it to one of my buddies, and he does all my betting stuff. And he looked at it, he said, "Son of a," I can't say that, can I? I said, "Son of a gun." He said, that action is rocking on the recoil lug on the front screw.
Oh, wow.
All right. So the whole action wasn't supported. The whole action wasn't supported in the stock. It was supported in the front, and in the back, it would move a little bit. And when we're talking a little bit, we're talking, you know, fractions of an inch. But they go, and then they, you know, they lay it out with epoxy in the action, and then just put the in the stock, and then put the action in the stock. There's a whole bunch of different things they could do. They pillar bed and stuff like that. But this one, he just bedded it, made sure that the recoil lug and the tang both hit at the same time, and you could put the same tension on. And Then I worked on some load development, and that's the second step of making a shoot, is making the ammunition so that it shoots in that rifle. In many cases, the closer the bullet is to the rifling when you assemble the cartridge, the more accurate the rifle will be. Some people say, jump the bullet this much, jump the bullet this much. In my experience, if I'm about 10, 20 thousandths off the rifling with the bullet, it shoots good for me. Well, there was a point where I would actually jam the bullets so that the bullet is actually in the rifling when you assemble the cartridge, when you close the bolt. That's good. You got to be careful, because that little jump of the bullet oftentimes allows the pressure to drop in the cartridge a little bit. So you develop a little more pressure if that bullet doesn't have the ability to jump. All right. So you got to be careful. But I'm careful and this and that. And son of a gun, that rifle, an off-the-shelf Savage 12, 26-inch barrel, by the way. It's a varminter, all right? They called it a varminter. A 26-inch barrel with the action bedded and tailored ammunition. I won matches with it. And that's you know, guys are shooting rifles at a, you know, rifles and scopes at a, I guess, I don't know, $7,000-$8,000, and you're shooting against them. Rifle was $800, and the scope was another $800, so that's not that bad. But
so you were kind of like the guy that won the
The Olympics?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, that's no. It's. There's basic things that you work with that make a shoot. And
it's amazing. Like, we have a couple of groups on Facebook. One of them is the ATN Smart HD Owners.
Okay.
And people get on there all the time and. My scope's not zeroing, it's not holding zero, and the problem's actually with the gun and not the scope, and it's something small.
I got to tell you, there's a lot of things to take for granted. I just showed you that rifle, and that rifle came with that's an aftermarket barrel on that rifle, and the Picatinny rail came mounted to the barrel, because that's the way it is. Well, shame on me. I never checked to see if the rail was tight on the barrel, all right?
I've never done anything like that.
Well,
never.
Yeah, and listen, if you have a problem, that's one thing to look for. I mean, how many people buy these rifle combos? You know, you buy a Savage Axis or something like that, and or one of the Rugers, and they'll come with the scope mounted and all this stuff, and people say, oh, that's right, I can go hunting like that, right? And they'll actually bore sight it at the factory and all this stuff. And yeah, I mean, you better make sure all that stuff is tight, because if it ain't, you know, you're gonna end up with a problem. And excuse me, try and find that problem.
There's a responsibility on the shooter's end.
Yeah. I mean, once you get a problem, and now if you go through it, and you make sure everything's tight and everything's, you know, the way it should be. If you have a problem, you have less variables to deal with. If you don't check all that stuff and the gun don't shoot, is it the scope? Is it the mount? Is it the ammunition? What is it? Now you got so many variables, and I'll tell you what, I was really not that good in math, solving for multiple variables. It just doesn't work.
That's one reason why I like air guns, is because if I'm having an issue with a gun, and I don't know if it's the gun or the scope, I'll take the scope off the gun and go put it on my air guns, put it on a couple different ones. And if I'm still having the same problem, then I know it's the scope.
Yeah.
If I don't have that, then I know it's
the truth of the matter. And you deal with some good scope manufacturers. You deal with Hawk too, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hawk, ATN. They're not scopes. They're good scopes,
right.
You know. And chances are that you're going to have a problem with an internal problem with the scope is pretty minimal, I would think. If you're going to have problems, you're going to have problems with rings and mounts and stuff like that.
Right.
Or like me, the action rocket in a stock. But
well, I mean, pretty much with anything in the entire universe, there's something that's going to be wrong with something at some point. I mean, even the ATN scopes, there's some issues that we have. Hawk has issues. Everything has an issue sometimes. Nothing is absolutely perfect.
No, nothing.
And that's a point that I push when it comes to the shooting industry, because people expect perfection with everything. And they don't extend much grace to the companies, which they really should, because we're all just people. They're people making things, and stuff happens. I just did a...
Except for Glocks. The truth of the matter is, and I laugh like hell. I talk about why semi-auto handguns are so popular and prolific now, and revolvers are not. And I mean, it's really, really simple. This is incredibly simple. Any revolver requires some degree of hand fitting to time the rotation of the cylinder in the frame with the barrel. Takes a person. A machine just doesn't do it. My wife had a Ruger LCP Max, and I decided to clean it. There's a cross pin that has to come out to take the barrel out. The plastic frame was over the edge of the pin. not a big problem, but it's something you recognize.
Yeah.
And you know why that was? That gun was assembled and then put into the grip frame. All right? That's the only way that pin could get under. Now, why is semi-autos so popular? It's a dollar cost thing. Yeah. All right? In most cases, those, aside from just assembly, you know, just putting parts together, making them work, those firearms are never touched by a human hand. It's all CNC. You watch CNC manufacturing, it's amazing. There's nothing's touched by a human. They put it in a machine and walk away from it, and it's two or three or five or ten different operations that are going to occur, and you go from a hunk of steel or aluminum into a what is almost a functional firearm once you put the fire control parts in. It's pretty amazing. So it's a matter of cost, and that's good. And firearms have come down in price so much. Oh my God.
Yeah, they have.
You know, I mean, it's nice to make them available when it comes to somebody, and shifting gears, this is a defense thing. When it comes to somebody's personal safety, cost shouldn't be a factor. You know,
right.
Everybody should be able to afford, you know, safety.
Well, I was just talking to somebody the other day. He actually owns the range in Cottageville. Live fire
shooting. How are they doing down there?
Good. I love the place. I was talking to him and...
What's his name? Is that Mark?
No.
Kevin.
Mm-hmm. But I was talking to him about carrying, and I said, I don't carry because I haven't had a whole lot of practice with my pistol. I mean, I shoot BB guns and that kind of thing, but in real scenario situations, I'm not sure how I would respond. So I don't generally carry it on my person. I'll carry it in my truck with me, but actually on my person, I don't. And he said that,
We'll be right back with more from Frank on Target after these messages.